Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and Layla Mudin is with us. She's our nutritionist in residence. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer the questions that you send to us at radioprogram@AOL.com, and we got a full mailbag questions. So what's next, Layla?
We've got an email from Judy. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm considering having surgery for pelvic organ prolapse. Most doctors use polypropylene mesh, but I've read that you can get an autoimmune disease from having this in your body. I've also heard that men have had problems after using the same mesh to repair a hernia. Now, my doctor only said that she had one patient with a reaction that she had to remove the mesh. But what do you think the long-term effects could be? I'd hate to get lupus or some other autoimmune disease after having this elective surgery.
Great question. It's a great question. So let me explain what this is about giving you an analogy. I've got a favorite pair of jeans, and I just really love these jeans. They fit great. They're my first pair of luxury jeans. They would have cost several hundred dollars, but I got them on sale, and so it was like a great deal. Good. And they fit great. First, actually, when I first put them on, they were a little tight, but then I went on the whole 30 diet, and ever since I've been on the whole 30 diet, they just fit perfectly, and I just love the jeans. The problem is that inadvertently, I sometimes put my keys in my pocket, in my side pocket, which is over my thigh, and that's not a good idea because the keys are sharp, and they wore a hole in the pocket. So
oh no,
yeah. So there's this little hole in the pocket. So I'm trying to think, can I sew it up? And I'm looking at it, and all the fabric around the hole is rather thin. So I think by the time I sew it up, first of all, the stitches wouldn't be secure. It's like darning a sock, but it's darning a pocket. And the stitches wouldn't
You're
be
gonna
secure.
You're going to feel that knotty knot on your thigh.
And you would feel that knotty knot. So So I was thinking of another fix, which is to cut out a piece of cloth, like a square, and put it in there.
A patch.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is just completely take out the pocket and replace the pocket. That's a whole other thing. I think I'd have to take it to a tailor to do that properly.
Right.
So when you have hernia repair, the tissue... like men mostly have inguinal hernias, but women sometimes do. The tissue where the stitches would be, there's a lot of pressure on that. So you'd have to use strong thread. Sometimes you use like a metal thread,
Like fish wire.
Yeah, like real, thick wire. But it doesn't anchor properly. It would tear through the surrounding tissue because the tissue is, frankly, like tissue paper. So... the same thing occurs in women very often, after multiple pregnancies or sometimes with aging, they have dropped bladders, which can actually protrude through the vagina, or they have dropped uterus. It just does, it just things, it's gravity and loss of elasticity and, things just sag. So it was the we practice to use, muscles. You know, like in my pocket, is to cut, you know, like cut out a strong piece of fabric and put it in there and then sew it around the top, you know, so it really has an anchor. And that's when they started using mesh. And mesh has been a mess because mesh, what happens with mesh is it creates reactions because the body reacts to a foreign body. It's uncomfortable because it doesn't feel normal. And that's in a very sensitive part of the body where there's a lot of nerves, whether it's an inguinal hernia. So, you know, people have had mesh, you know, they feel it, you know. But worse yet, they can develop autoimmune reactions. So, you know, I'm looking, you know, I just looked this up and I see here there's a dispatch from the FDA. On April 16, 2019, the FDA ordered all manufacturers of surgical mesh intended for transvaginal repair of anterior compartment prolapse, that's a drop bladder, to stop selling and distributing their products immediately. Okay, so this one is, it says pelvic organ prolapse. So the question, so maybe the this applies just to the bladder mesh as opposed to other types of mesh, but there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of lawsuits around the mesh. There's a lot of recalls. And in fact, there's a whole surgical subspecialty that has evolved, which is a very difficult type. It's easy to put in a mesh. It's much harder to extricate a mesh because the mesh, if you can imagine it, kind of intercalates with tissue and it gets all...
it's kind of woven in.
It's kind of like Velcro, you know, in some ways.
It's kind of like, yes. Yeah.
It really, it's woven in, but it even has a sticky, you know, characteristic where it sticks to other adjacent structures internally, and it's a mess to get out. So there's all kinds of lawsuits and recalls, and the FDA told the manufacturers to stop selling and distributing their products in 2019. So I don't know what is contemplated for this person in 2020, you know, given that there's a relative contraindication to the use of this mesh, but you know, so I don't know. It's a tough problem. I mean, the alternative is to use a pessary, which is a nuisance. But you know, when my mom had this problem, I just recommended that she use a pessary because she was old, and I didn't want her to undergo a very invasive surgery and have a lot of pain. And I said, you know. Well, the pessary.
Do you want to explain what a pessary is?
It's a vaginal insert. I think that they may have found pessaries in, you know, archaeological sites, you know, in ancient Egypt and in, you know, Rome and Greece. It's just basically kind of a plug that you put up there that holds things up there. Yeah, it's like stick a cork in it, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't sound too pleasant, but it's a very simple solution that is not involving surgery. And, you know, they're uncomfortable. They can cause irritation. They can cause bleeding. They can sometimes cause infection. But, you know, it's, for some, it's a preferable alternative to a surgery, which is rolling the dice a little bit. I think that there are better forms of surgery that do not involve mesh, you know, bladder and uterine suspension surgery. I would have to talk to a surgeon. You know, I invite any surgeon who's familiar with this or someone who's had personal experience with successful surgery to send in an email and describe their experience, radioprogram@AOL.com, because it's a dilemma. I mean, anytime you put a foreign material in the body, there's a possibility of a reaction, and an autoimmune reaction could result in not necessarily outright lupus, but some sort of subtle autoimmune disease where the body is fighting to reject some foreign material.
Yes. Yes. So that is a concern.
Yeah.
So Judy, if there is any, maybe his family history of autoimmune disease in your family or something you've been found to have, you may not be a great candidate. You need a really good conversation with your doctor about that.
Yeah. It's a risk-benefit equation. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. All right. Judy, thank you for that question. I think this would be a good time.
Yes, to
for
pause.
A word from one of our sponsors.
Yes, let's do that. Folks, our sponsors would like to share this vital message with you. So listen up. Here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax Gold with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years. With a 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, and they'll do so in the coming year, in 2021. So now back to questions.
We've got one from Sylvia. I am on Eliquis and Plavix for atrial fibrillation and stents.
Mm-hmm.
So my doctor told me that I
excuse
should...
Excuse me. Yeah. The Plavix is for the stents. The Plavix is commonly used... blood thinner that prevents the clots from forming on the stents. And Eliquis is usually used just alone for atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. It's coming to supplant warfarin or Coumadin for atrial fibrillation, because when you have atrial fibrillation, you're more likely to flip a blood clot to your brain and have a stroke. However, warfarin is still what is used for valvular problems. They haven't really approved Eliquis for if you have some sort of valve problem that, I mean, if you've had a replacement valve that requires anticoagulation, or if you've had, if you have some valvular abnormality that makes you more likely to have blood clots.
Yeah. So Sylvia, Sylvia's doctor told her that she shouldn't take fish oil, turmeric, and Advil. She says, I've been taking devil's claw for pain. Should I discontinue that also? Are all anti-inflammatory substances blood thinning? Longtime listener, I value your judgment. And I also enjoyed your newsletter on the vaccine.
Oh, good. Great.
There you go, Doctor.
Somebody didn't cancel us after that.
You got some takers.
Right. Well, you know, as Abe Lincoln once said, you know, you can please some people all of the time. You can please all the people some of the time, but you can't please all of the people all the time.
Right. So I went ahead and looked up Devil's Claw in my Herb Drug Interaction Handbook, my handy little PDR that I would carry around in the pocket of my lab coat back when I was a hospital dietitian.
Mm-hmm.
That was about 100 years ago. Anyway, the book is still relevant.
Did you work with Florence Nightingale?
Absolutely
then?
Relevant.
Was Florence Nightingale there?
Yeah. Okay, stop.
Yeah.
So Devil's Claw does interact with anticoagulant drugs, drugs that may increase the risk of bleeding. So there is something here. And Devil's Claw also interacts with antihypertensives, that's blood pressure medication, with cardiac drugs, with antiarrhythmics as well.
Yeah.
So, but some of these, you know, it could be that a potential exists. It's not an out and out, you may never take that.
I have to say, I think a lot of these, you know, as much as it's nice to look this up in an authoritative place, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Wait, Dr. Hoffman, it says concurrent use of the herb and warfarin, which is Coumadin, caused purpura.
Oh, that's like little purple spots. Purple spots,
right.
Which is my little superficial bleeding spots.
So it may be that it's okay with Eliquis and Plavix, but, you know, who are we to say?
Well, okay, so I think this is a problem.
This is before the days of Plavix and
Eliquis. This is the problem, I think, with some of these you know, drug-nutrient interaction things. They will talk about the potential for problems, theoretically, and then they'll cite a case which might be a rare case that may, if you drill down, may not actually be attributable to the combination, but, you know, to the original medication. So I would say that
I would work with the patient on an individual basis to see if a little bit of fish oil is tolerated, very likely. I mean, we had a patient yesterday, in the office. He's on a lot of these things. He's on curcumin, he's on fish oil, he's on many things that are anti-inflammatory, and he now just had to start Eliquis. I said, look, be aware. I mean, if you get a bloody nose, spontaneous bleeding, if you sneeze and all of a sudden the whites of your eye are all red, or if you shave and you cut yourself and it just doesn't stop bleeding, you have to keep applying tissue paper all day, or if you look at your forearms and you say, oh my goodness, I barely tap my forearm against the kitchen counter and all of a sudden I'm all black and blue, okay, then you're over anticoagulated, and you might it's more likely due to the medication than due to the little bit of fish oil you're taking. So I have to say, I don't follow those like the Bible, it's not like the Ten Commandments or something of, like absolute, directly from Mount Sinai. Well, it is probably from, it probably was Mount Sinai Hospital that put this together,
Oh gosh. Sylvia, thank you for that question.
Yeah, so, I think individualized care around that, because I do think those things have enough benefits that, doctors, I think, love to do this. They say, you're on this medication, don't take anything else, that could possibly interfere with the medication. Well,
that's their backup to, I don't know the answer, when they should really say, I don't know.
If in doubt, throw it out. If in doubt, throw it out. That's the default reaction.
Exactly. Yeah. Or when in doubt, don't. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sylvia. Okay. We've got a couple of questions here from Desert Boy.
You have a comment here. I actually wanted to get that in.
Oh, okay. Okay. A comment from Gisella?
Yeah.
Okay. Gisella says, I love your podcast. It's one of my favorites of all the medical podcasts I listen to. I just wish you would not interrupt so much.
And she's talking to
me. Sometimes you interrupt the worst times because you don't allow the guest to finish the thought and change the course of the answer. Thank you.
Okay. I really felt that profoundly when I heard that. So I'm going to make a New Year's resolution to check myself. But let me explain, because I interrupt you a lot. And, I do it for two reasons. One is out of exuberance. It's like, I just really want to make up, you say something and it's like, oh, wow, that really triggers a thought.
Wait, I got to get this in. I get it. I feel that.
Yeah.
I feel that.
I also do that because I like to move the podcast along. And I mean, one thing I could do is I say, I have this very distinguished guest. This is, he's the winner of the Nobel Prize and he's like, the foremost authority on, vitamin D in the world. And so let me introduce him and I'll go in the other room and make a smoothie. And for the next 40 minutes, you're going to hear this guy, share his dissertation on vitamin D. And that might be great for some people, and he certainly will be able to explain everything that he needs to explain. But I kind of like just as a listening experience, the crosstalk, the conversation. Now, another thing I might mention is that I was brought up where there were a lot of chaotic family gatherings, and everybody talked at once. And in my family, everybody interrupts. It's not a good habit, but there's very little impulse control around if you're excited and you want to say something. So I'm going to resolve. I'm not going to say I'm never going to do it, but I'm going to resolve to be a little more attentive to that. Because frankly, if you're saying something or if one of my guests is saying something that's very important and I derail them, people may have wanted to hear what they were about to share, and all of a sudden I'm chiming in. So that's my New Year's resolution for 2021. It's my only vice.
That's great.
It's my only, I don't have any vices anymore.
Oh my. Oh, Gisella, thank you for that comment.
Okay. Yeah, it's very constructive because she likes it. She keeps, I mean, she listens. It's friendly advice. It's not malicious.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. I actually feel the affection in her note.
Yeah.
Really. And
yeah.
She thanks you for it. So yeah. That's nice. Thank you, Gisella. Okay. We've got an email from Desert Boy who asks a couple of questions. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I listen to your program every day while walking my two Labrador retrievers.
Hmm.
I find your program very interesting and informative, but unfortunately, the labs do not.
I think.
Yeah. Anyway, I have a situation I need some advice on. My daughter is 28 years old and is adopted just like me.
Hmm.
Oh, how wonderful. You were born from your parents' hearts.
Hmm.
That's what I say about adopted people.
Yes.
She did a 23andMe gene study and discovered that she had familial hypocholesterolemia.
Mm-hmm.
She's physically active. Her height and weight is great. She eats right. She really takes care of herself. Her total cholesterol is 280. HDL is 72. Her LDL is 195. And her primary care wants her to take 10 milligrams of Lipitor and retest in a few weeks. Now, I know, Dr. Hoffman, you're not a big fan of statins, and I'm wondering if you have any advice for her on this issue. I'm concerned that plaque has been building, and as well, these cholesterol levels being so high for such a young person, that this is happening. She's just 28 years old.
Okay. So, you know, Layla, that yesterday I actually saw a couple of patients. Actually, several, I think it was three patients yesterday who we acceded to them being on statins. Yeah? You remember?
Yes, you wrote scripts. I saw them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because
mm-hmm.
On the basis that they had an EBT heart scan, which I sent them for, which showed the development of plaque.
Yes.
So it showed that they were indeed at risk. Now, I don't know what the situation is with this 28-year-old. It sounds bad, like, oh, she has this genetic disease that gives her high cholesterol, familial hypercholesterolemia.
Yeah.
And the prevalence of that is actually pretty high. It's not that rare. If there's there are two types. There's one that's heterozygous, which means there's one gene that's normal and one gene that's predisposed to high cholesterol. And then there's a double hit. The double hit is like a 1 in 500. I couldn't find statistics for the heterozygous form. So from her cholesterol, it sounds like she has a heterozygous form. People who have the double hit, they have cholesterols like 500, 600. It's like enormously high.
Wow, wow.
And they have 18-fold higher risk than the general population for heart disease. So, I think if you have a double hit on that and you have like a sky-high cholesterol, she has a cholesterol that is high, but it may not be in the presence of plaque. So she should get an EBT heart scan. I generally don't do it on 28-year-olds, but maybe because of this finding, she could get an EBT heart scan. I prefer it to CAT scan. CAT scans are generally higher intensity radiation by a factor of 10. So the EBT heart scan just looks for calcium score. And if you can get the calcium score on her coronary arteries and it's zero, I would say statins are not appropriate. If she's at 28, is already starting to have significant plaque, I'd say, use a statin, but use all the other strategies. We use chiolic age, garlic extract, fish oil, olive leaf extract, resveratrol, bergamot, all these things that are sort of magnesium, things that are heart protective.
Dr. Hoffman, let me ask you, she's 28. Say you send her for an EBT heart scan and it's a zero.
Yeah.
When would you have to go for the next EBT heart scan?
Well, that's actually a good question because she's so young. That, you might say the rationale from the cardiologist might be, well, she has zero now, but she's going to be around for another, 80 years. So in 80 years, she could get an awful lot of plaque. So let's start early on her statin. I would say, probably at 10-year intervals. If you're nervous, do it every 5 years.
But women, mm-hmm. Young women especially, are protected against cardiovascular disease by virtue of their hormones. Yes. It's only when women are postmenopausal. The other mm-hmm. thing I would look at is I would look comprehensively at all her risk factors because, for example, we saw yesterday a guy's cholesterol is 156, but he has significant plaque. Why? He has another risk factor. He has elevated Lp(a). He has a strong family history of heart disease. He's thin as a rail. He exercises.
He exercises. He eats beautifully, really, for the most part. He's doing everything right.
Yeah.
You know.
He practically has a six-pack. He's a guy's pushing 80. And he has some coronary artery disease because of the Lp(a), for which there's some new injectable drugs that may target that, but they're not readily available yet.
That's interesting. There's so little to do about Lp(a) at this time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was some little bit of research. I was talking to him yesterday after you saw him, Dr. Hoffman. I said, there's been some research on vitamin C and some on L-carnitine,
proline,
but none of these are a magic bullet.
Proline and things like that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. So it's...
So anyway, let's leave it at that because we're waxing a little long for today's broadcast. Save a couple of questions for next week. It may be a quiet week, but we're at it. Because, talking to you and fielding these questions is kind of like a vacay for me. You know, it's not, I don't consider
it. Yeah, it's fun. Likewise, Dr. H.
Yep. So we'll reprise it for this was our penultimate broadcast, our ultimate broadcast of 2020, closing out the year next week. Send us your questions, radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination. Thank you, Layla, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
And Merry Christmas to all. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.